Welcome to All In My Business on East London Radio, the business show dedicated to the 21st century business. My name is Nicola Millington and I'm here with Ian Chambers. Say hello, Ian.
Hello, Ian.
This week we have got a packed show full about things about business, of course, High Street specifically. We've got interviews with Simon Reeves.
Yep. Colliers International, the property agents and consultants.
Yes, and we've also got a young man from Greenwich University talking about business, actually, and the things that he's teaching the students as they progress into entrepreneurship.
And entrepreneurs, always, I've noticed, they always look for reasons to do something, whereas business owners look for reasons, like challenges that I can't do it, therefore I have to think of something else.
There needs to be a proportional reduction in physical buildings used for retail purposes.
And one thing that came across from everybody was the need to turn a shop or a store into a bit of an experience for shoppers.
So our first conversation with Simon Reeve, who is the celebrity behind the Great British High Street 2018 Awards, the entries for which are open, and you can find out more about them at thegreatbritishhighstreet.co.uk. But here's Nicola's conversation with Simon Reeve.
In continuation of our look at the High Street and the ups and downs of what's going on, we've had a request from the Great British High Street Awards, looking at actually the ups and downs, the highs and lows of what's going on in the High Street today. So we've got the wonderful Simon Reeves. Say hello, Simon.
Hello. I like the wonderful bit.
So how did you get involved with the Great British High Street Awards?
Well, they rang me up and told me all about it. They actually sent me quite an efficient PowerPoint presentation, which I didn't know how to open on my computer, but don't tell them. I just thought it sounded really important, frankly, mm-hmm. because, you know, we all know that stores on the high street face challenges. Mm-hmm. But what's brilliant, I think, about these awards is that they're awards, but they're also a campaign. Mm-hmm. The idea is to try and recognize and celebrate local achievements on our high streets and support the communities around the high streets, which we all depend on in some way, and we all, or many of us, live in, work in, shop in, and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a good idea. I felt it was about something important, and they promised they would let me go and meet some really quite inspiring shopkeepers and shop owners, and I'd have some fun experiences seeing them, and that's what happened.
Okay, so there's a research that underpins the awards this year in 2018. Mm. How much have you read the whole research, or do you know all the details involved in the research?
I know a fair bit about the details, yeah. Test me, go on.
So one of the things I was looking at, actually, from the information that we were provided is that there were some areas that they identified some good practice. And what I wanted to know is there a plan, in your understanding, of rolling out good practice across the board with the research they found? Because obviously there are challenges on the high street across the board, across the whole country. And we're trying to identify the things that keep a high street alive and the high street that doesn't succeed. So is there an idea and a desire to roll out good practice?
Good point. Yes, there definitely is. I think that's a really important part of the Great British High Street Awards.
Yeah.
That is a big part, I believe, of why the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government is doing it, and why Visa is sponsoring it. Mm-hmm. You know, they want people to see examples of best practice and be inspired, because, as you know, everybody's got a role to play. Mm-hmm. I suppose I'm a shopper in this scenario. Mm-hmm. There is also the government that needs to do things. There's also shopkeepers and shop owners themselves who ideally would do things, and I think they can learn from adopting some of the best practices that we're highlighting through the awards and through the accompanying information and videos. I have been out on a whole series of high streets meeting some shopkeepers and store owners who are, I think, doing the best practice that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think people could learn from them, perhaps a little bit. I think one of the things that really came across to me, I went to butchers, bakers, clothing store. I went to a zero waste shop. Mm-hmm. In Devon. And one thing that came across from everybody was the need to turn a shop or a store into a bit of an experience for shoppers. Now, you can't hope to compete against the internet as a store owner in terms of supplying everything possible under the sun. The internet is always going to be better for that because it's got warehouses the size of football pitches. But if you're a high street store, what you can really compete on is giving a personal experience to people who come into the store, giving them what one bookshop owner described as extreme customer service, giving them an experience, going that bit further and making them feel special about coming into your store. And that will really help your store and the high street.
And so with the high street as it is at the moment, there's lots of places that they with lots of vacant lots, if you want. Is there a drive to actually bring some of those alive back again in different ways to help support those really optimistic high street retailers that are out there already?
Well, I think, you know, it's up really to the government, I suppose, in many ways, to talk at a national level about what they're doing. But I think what's clear to me is that there are people out there who have great ideas, who have passion for their idea, whether it's setting up a zero waste shop where there's no packaging, or whether it's setting up a bakehouse or a clothing shop or whatever it is, but people who follow through on their passions. And I think if you do that, and if you do work hard, because nobody's suggesting that this is an easy ride. No small business owner is going to say, oh, yes, I roll into work at 11 o'clock and leave at 3. You know, you've got to commit your all to these ideas, and you've got to have a good, solid idea in the first place. Then hopefully we can turn more of those empty stores into thriving shops that are at the heart of really strong communities. And, you know, and there will be lots of advice and suggestions and a focus brought to the high street through the website that's set up as part of the set up as part of the awards, which is thegreatbritishhighstreet.co.uk, and members of the public can get involved and support their local high street on social media using a hashtag my high street, and through those websites and through those social media posts, people can start identifying some of the best examples of best practice, really good solid ideas for a business to do, really good ideas for businesses to set up. I mean, I'm using this example of this zero waste shop I went to in Totnes in Devon. That was the first no packaging store or supermarket in the UK. But they had a great idea that now other people are picking up on around the country and putting those onto their high street. So often it can be about innovating with a great idea, and that will turn the empty store into a busy, thriving one.
So using your example, the zero waste shop, it can't sit in silo of being good, even with the greatest experience. So what around is the ecosystem that supports it? So what I mean is parking, accessibility. What is being put around to make that really successful?
That's a really good point. And I was, I think, again, these are sort of things that a government minister will no doubt have a great spiel to say on. But I was with the Minister for High Streets just earlier this morning, by a wonderful coincidence, as we were launching the Great British High Street Awards. And he was saying that he's really keen on getting somebody, a named, identified person in a local authority to have responsibility for issues like that. So people can go and talk to them and identify them as the person who they go and speak to about parking, for example. All those things are obviously really important. Rent and rates, also very important. The ability of people to access loans, very important. But I suppose one of the things I've been doing, and my little focus as part of these awards, has been going out and meeting store owners and hearing about their what's the unique selling points of what they're doing, for example. And yes, parking is important, of course it is, and rent and rates and everything like that. But what these people were saying to me was one of the key things was about really going that little bit further with your store and what you're offering to the public, making it look good and wonderful and turning into a proper memorable experience for people who come in. And, you know, whether that's a butcher's or whether it's a bookshop or a clothing store, it all matters. It all makes a difference. So personalize the experience, if you like, and go that bit further. And that is a way to attract people in. And that way, you know, whether there's parking or not, people will come to your store.
So how can people get involved with the awards?
Well, they've got to get online just for the purposes of looking for more information and nominating their high street or entering a shop into the awards. They look online at thegreatbritishhighstreet.co.uk. That's got loads more information. And they can also support their local high street on social media using hashtag MyHighStreet. But I think also people can just look around at what are the best examples of best practice that stores are doing, and they can share that with other shops and with shop owners that they like and visit.
One final question. What's your favourite high street?
Mine, well, I live down in the southwest. I'm from London, but I live down in the southwest now in Devon, and I'm a big fan of Exeter High Street, which I'm going to try and slip into the awards when nobody is looking.
If it wins, I'll say that you got a back it win.
don't tell him.
Our next conversation is with Aaron, lecturer at University of Greenwich. He focuses on business and entrepreneurship, and he discusses what the 21st century entrepreneur is looking for out there and what they're doing and the things that they're learning to move forward into the next economy.
In the studio now, we have Aaron Tan, who I met a few minutes ago, really, and was asking him exactly what he does, but I think it's a long list. So how would you describe what you do, Aaron?
I say I'm a serial entrepreneur, university lecturer, and international speaker. That's what it says on my website, right, on my bio. What I like to do is I like to keep busy and explore different options. So university takes up about 50% of my time, and running my own businesses takes up the other 50%. And when I can, I'll speak at other like seminars, which makes it 110%, I guess.
So how did you get into doing what you're doing?
So I actually went through the traditional path of going through education, getting a job, and actually what happened is my dad had the restaurant like a family business the whole time, and whilst I was working, doing all the things, going on international meetings, living the dream, so to speak, and what happened is actually my mum wasn't well, and ultimately she passed away about six years ago. My dad, his attention was diverted from the business, and who can blame him? It's 35 years together.
Understandable, yeah.
And so what I did is I left my job to build up the family business again, and that was really cool.
And that's a restaurant business locally, was it?
Yeah, that's how it started, yeah.
Okay.
And what kind of local business was it? I mean, restaurant, but what kind of restaurant? Food, cuisine? Because we like food on the show.
Oh, you like food? Okay, cool.
We do like food.
Food is good. Food is good. It's Chinese food.
Okay.
Yeah, Chinese food. And so, once we grew that business, then I was helping other people. So one person asked me, was talking about a photo studio. And I said, well, I've got a room, because he fell ill a few years ago as well. So he had to close his business. So I said, well, I've got a room. Why don't we work together? Use my... Well, we just leverage off each other's expertise and skills. And then I wrote to the university, said, I like to speak to the students. And they said, yeah, cool, come. So, that's how it started.
So that segues quite nicely into my question is, how did you get involved in the university? But you kind of, answer that question. But what did you focus on, and why did you think you could add any value to the students at the university?
Okay, that's a good question. And I think my thought process at the time was, you hear a lot of students say, okay, we've got 3 years or 4 years worth of education. What do I do? A lot of them can't get jobs. A lot of them end up working in McDonald's, for example. And then there were lots of reports at the time. So I thought, okay, let's go in, especially for business. If you can't get a job, then create your own job. And the reception of that was pretty good. I got some good feedback, and then the university asked me back again. So one lecture became two. Two became four, four became eight. And they said, would you like to, teach for a semester? So I said, yeah, that'd be cool. Just for my own ego, just put it on the CV. Yeah, cool. And then after feedback from that, they said, would you like to come back again next year? So I said, yeah, sure, why not? And it kind of just transitions from there.
Okay. And so what kind of syllabus do you have within when you're teaching in the semester? What kind of syllabus and topics do you cover?
Personally?
Yeah.
Okay. So I do a range of things from marketing to strategy to operations, procurement. And what I do on my own personal lecturing style is I relate it back to business. So you can learn all the theory or the models. And that's nice. That's nice. But models don't make you money. Mm-hmm. You have to implement it, look at the challenges that they can bring. And that's my approach to it.
Okay. And is there a difference in your head for the students and the students that you come across? Because how long have you been doing this now?
What, lecturing?
Yes.
January 2017.
Okay, so just over a year. So in your head, for a 4-year cycle, have you seen a difference between the students that are entrepreneurial and students that just want to be business owners? Because I think there's a difference, right?
For sure. I'm glad you asked that, because actually it's all a mindset thing. And entrepreneurs, so I think business owners see their business as a job. Okay. Entrepreneurs see it as their baby, something to be proud of. And it goes beyond money. It goes beyond that freedom that everyone talks about. And entrepreneurs always, I've noticed, they always look for reasons to do something, whereas business owners look for reasons, like challenges that I can't do it, therefore I have to think of something else. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting question, and there is a subtle but big difference between the two.
And how does that feed in the success rates you see? I mean, it's only been just over a year, but the success rates of the students coming through your courses and the outcomes they have at the other end, and even passing their exams or tests.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what I've noticed is, it kind of alludes to what I was saying earlier with the entrepreneurs. Like, they don't just see it as a job, they see this as their future. So they're investing more time, more effort, whether it's reading or even asking me out of lecture time, out of class time, you know, help on their syllabus. And it's more of a problem-solving mentality rather than here's a hurdle, now I'm stuck, you know. So yeah, it definitely translates into their success rates.
And the students you're working with, have they already got business ideas, or are they already running businesses? What stages do they tend to be at?
Oh yeah, it's a variety. So some want to run a business, some have started, some are running. So it's really interesting that mix, and that's why I love it so much, because it's kind of cliche, but there's no two students which are the same, you know, and I love that.
Are there any trends, like there's a lot wanting digital businesses, say, or is it all kinds of business?
So there is, especially with this year's final year students, they all want to do apps and digital marketing. And I was like, okay, that's nice. do you know the cost to develop an app? And they're like, no. I said, well, just take a stab. And some of them think, you know, 1,000, 2,000. I'm thinking, so what's your reach? Because it's all about reach. And they say, I want to do this, I want to do that. Ah, okay. Take 2,000 and multiply it by 100. You know, and you're closer.
Yeah.
And so, well, I don't want to shatter the dreams, but just give them more realistic, so they're not broken when they encounter these challenges.
Yeah, but I'm sure that my, like you said about the entrepreneurs over the business owners, the entrepreneurs, I guess, who want to develop the apps, and I guess you see the split, would be, okay, I'm trying to solve a solution, and I think app is the best way. But if you tell me what my barriers are, what is the other way to solve the solution? Because that's the problem they're trying to solve. Right?
Yeah.
With the app. Okay.
Yeah.
There is a report that I read a while ago that people, valedictorians and people that succeed at university actually don't do well in business. Do you have a viewpoint on that, or do you have an idea of why that can be, bear in mind, you know, you, with your students?
I mean, totally. I think what it is the universities are great. Education's great, you know. But what happens is a lot of people become sheltered in that environment. And the reality is, when you go out in business, you're dealing with different types of people. I mean, when you're on this, even on this radio show, you're talking to different people, which is phenomenal. And that's a skill that universities, for the most part, kind of put aside. You know, the reality is, when you're in university, many people are of the same, by the social class or economic class or whatever it is, the demographics very similar. You go on the street, there's more than one type of demographic, you know, social class, income levels, race, gender, whatever it is. And it's that ability to integrate and mix with different types of people, which is what successful people do. And I think that's what the valedictorians, you were saying, they do very well. They're very good at what they do. Unfortunately, that's it.
Yeah, in the environment. That's a good answer. In your class, gender mix, is there an equal split? Is there a very clear identification of there's more female over male, the kind of topics they will cover, the businesses they want to run? Is there a trend that you've seen within the year you've been lecturing?
Yeah, so the marketing students tend to be more female-based. They're more popular with the females, which is why I took marketing when I was at uni. the accounting ones tend to be more male-based, the more technical side. And I don't think that's something is really interesting, because we were talking earlier about businesses needing to have that gender split, equality. I'm all for equality. I really am. But the thing is, you can't force it. It has to be organic. Mm-hmm. Maybe women tend to be more geared and more interested in the marketing side, the creative side, and men tend to be more technical. And that's not a good or bad thing. It's just, I think that a lot of the gender equality things is really, really good. And it's actually opening a lot of opportunities for women, which is awesome. But you can't force it. I think it's just providing a platform and let it organically level itself out, if you will.
Mm. And my last question would be, do you, in your courses or within the business school itself, Greenwich mm-hmm. Business School, do you cover for things like mental well-being and stress and the code word is mindfulness, but that's broad. Do you cover those kind of things? Because being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, regardless if you're very linear or not, mm-hmm. it's a very lonely place to be. So is that something that the school looks at as a topic and an area to cover?
What you mean as like an academic subject? So I totally agree with what you're saying. Success is a very lonely place, especially when you're working your way up, because not everybody understands the same journey that you're going on. In terms of the school, in terms of what I've encountered so far, in terms of the syllabus, it's something which people are made aware of, especially in the sustainability ethics side, but it's not a topic in itself, but it's something I do bring into my tutorials. So when people talk about, oh, how do you do this? One of the first things I say is, do you meditate? You know, yeah. And it's not for everybody, and that's cool, but it's that approach, that awareness, which really helps. So things like meditation, or even just clearing your mind. If you're an introvert, just having your alone time. If you're an extrovert, being with people, you know. So from that side of view, that's where I come in. And I think the students really relate to that.
We know the high street is under pressure. Yes. We've talked about it on this program. Uh-huh. How often do your students actually talk about setting up a business which is likely to be on a high street? Does that ever happen, or is that not the way this next generation of entrepreneurs are thinking?
Yeah, so a lot of the millennials and Gen Zs start talking about online businesses. That's their first instinct. And they say, why? Because I can reach more people. And what's really interesting is this mindset of selling the best product or service at the lowest price. And I was like, really? Really? If you've got a quality product, if you've got a quality service, you should be rewarded for it. Because otherwise you're going to run yourself into the ground. And price is one of the biggest differentiators you can have, I think. If you make it more accessible to people devalue your product or service.
Yeah.
If it's premium, make it valuable, make it seem like it's worth that price tag, if you will.
Okay, Aaron, thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And you can be found over at the business school at Greenwich University, just over the water, but not far away. thanks for traveling all the way over the water to see us.
It was a good swim. Thank you.
Interesting conversation with Aaron from the University of Greenwich, who's there at the coalface with the next generation of entrepreneurs about to hit the business world. Over the last couple of programs, we've been talking about the problems on the high street, as everyone is talking about the issues with empty shops, with rents going in the wrong direction for businesses, and overall confidence has gone apparently in the high street. What are your thoughts on that, Nicola?
Well, it has been interesting listening to the reports that are coming through, Ian. And as a woman in business, with my humble opinion and observations, and been working in business for over 10, 15 years on my own, I would say there's some fundamental flaws actually with some of these reports that are coming in, and they're flaws that actually I don't know if many people pay attention to, are aware of, or choose to, you know, have a closed mind to it. But fundamentally, one of the major problems I think is the foundation of what they're measuring and why. So you're finding a lot of the reports are founded on principles of protecting the high street and growing the high street, which is fine. But what are those foundations? Well, one of the foundations is ensuring that the business owner makes as much profit as possible. Now, don't get me wrong. Of course, you should be making profit. That's how the industrial revolution came about, actually. It's to be able to galvanize as much as you possibly can and then feed the community. But that's the second bit that people forget. You're supposed to make profit to put back into the community, not about feeding just yourself.
Yeah, because everyone's saying, isn't it terrible how our local community high street has a problem?
Yes.
Well, there's the answer. It is about community.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the fundamental flaw in all of these reports when they're saying that, you know, we ask the consumer what they want. I believe the consumer does know what they want. I just don't think sometimes we can articulate it because it's not so obvious, if you know what I mean. You know that there's a pain barrier if you want, but you're not sure what that pain barrier is. And as an observer looking outside, from outside looking in, and as a person that actually focuses actually about building our future economy, and you look at all the dots that tie us together, i.e. the increase in mental health, the lack of fair pay, all those kind of issues, what's at the crux of it? There's a 5% of our economy that's making a lot of money, and there's the rest of us out there trying to make it work. Well, if you have an employer that pays fairly, that means you give back, you're giving back into the community. I don't think necessarily it's a government thing. I don't think it's necessarily a Brexit thing. Of course, these things have a structural impact. But on the whole, I think it's more a mental and humanity thing. And I know I say that quite a lot on this show, but I think you find in, actually, the businesses that are thriving really take care of their people really, really, really well. Not short-term thriving, long-term. I'm looking at the John Lewis's of the world.
Mm.
They take care of their people very well.
So we need some of these local, smaller than John Lewis maybe, businesses to come on the programme and tell us the story from the community perspective, from people perspective, not just from bank balance and rent and all that stuff perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. And I think one of the things I would say is I know it's difficult. I know it's difficult to implement because our structure, our economy is not set up like that to support those kind of ideological ideas. But we have to understand, if we don't pay for it one end, we'll pay for it in the other end. And we are beginning to pay for it in the other, in our mental health issues, in the amount of people, young people committing suicide. Mm. It's a reality. It's not it could happen. It's a fact.
Yeah.
So it will be paid for one way or the other. Once we put it out there and people are willing to address it, it's fine. You just got to know what it is. Call it out and move forward. One of the key factors in how this is going to evolve is when you have more women and more family-orientated businesses.
I completely agree.
Coming to the fore.
Completely agree. The exciting things I'm seeing in small business tend to have women, tend to be in this area, women of colour, I'll put that out there as well, who are taking risks that maybe others wouldn't. You know, it's crazy time to set up business is what we're all told. But there are some amazing things going on.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we've had a few of those people on this show. And there's loads more we could talk to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think there is something... I really genuinely think this is a time for women to actually take over the world. Please. Can we have a break?
Well, at least be part of the conversation.
Exactly.
Be part of the conversation.
Let's be sitting next together at this, driving it.
And then figure out the solution together. Yeah,
completely agree. So we move on to our last chat of the day, and this is with some representatives from Colliers International who have got a new report coming out. As we've said before on this programme, the high street is not a happy place for business right now. Retailers and landlords are facing the most challenging environment since the global financial crisis of 10 years ago. This is driven by changing consumer trends, higher inflation, and basically lower consumer confidence and spend. This is what has led to Toys R Us, Maplin and Poundland going into administration, and Byron, Carpetright, Prezzo and House of Fraser among those seeking company voluntary agreements. Other well-known names on the high street that have recently announced they'll be closing stores, including Marks and Spencer's, Jamie's Italian and Mothercare. So is there any positive news to partly offset all this doom and gloom facing the sector? Leading property consultancy Colliers International believe there is. Interestingly, research commissioned by them for their Midsummer Retail Report found that shoppers in the 18 to 34 age group named ASOS as the online brand they'd most like to see open a physical store, followed by Amazon and Boohoo. But while the shift to online shopping has undoubtedly exacerbated the problems facing bricks and mortar retailers, their research also suggests that some of the strongest support for the town centre shopping experience comes from younger people. Asked to name their preferred shopping environment, three quarters of 18 to 24-year-olds named the town centre. This compares to only at just over half of over 45-year-olds, who said they found the prospect of going into town appealing, confounding the widespread assumption that it's Generation Z who has given up on the high street. Colliers International predicts that spending in the second half of 2018 will rise as the pressure on consumers lifts, thanks to the combination of lower inflation and an increase in real wages. They also point to an encouraging number of household brands that continue to expand and the growing trend of online brands and manufacturers that are trialling physical stores. With retail store property vacancy rates predicted to increase in 2018, and with retail rents outside of London yet to return to their pre-2008 level, what's the outlook for retail businesses looking to navigate their way through this challenging environment and for property investors to look for some secure returns? So I've got on the line Matt and Mark from Colliers International. Hello, guys. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Now, you work for Colliers International, which is a global property consultancy. So you're looking at things from the landlord's perspective. Is it all doom and gloom with the landlords?
Well, we're looking at it from the landlord's and retailer's perspective, actually. We advise both.
Right.
No, it's not doom and gloom at all. I think it's fair to say that the retail sector is going through its own industrial revolution, in that the whole online and physical retailing environment is now what they call omni-channel.
Yep.
So the great news is, for customers, they've never had more choice. The bad news is, from the retailer's point of view, is that they have to service that market, and it's very complicated. And some companies are really relishing this challenge and this opportunity, and they're doing a fantastic job of it. But others, they're not adopting and they're not evolving as quickly, and they're being left behind, and some of them have gone bust.
So do you think it is about doing the multi-retail experience across different channels? Is that the answer?
Absolutely. But it's not the only answer. I mean, ultimately, it's about being a good retailer. So whilst there have been some great results put out recently by the likes of Ted Baker or Jules or JD Sports, I think we're nearly 33% up this year. Nevertheless, you get companies like Primark who don't have an online sales platform, and they're absolutely knocking the lights out. And why is that? Well, it's because they're really, really good at retailing. They offer people what they want at the price they want to pay, and you know, they do incredibly well. So, you know, the omni-channel world and the onset of online retailing has turned things on its head, but it's not the whole story.
Your report highlights that younger shoppers are still happy to go to their local shopping centre. Do you think that is the Primark experience? Do you think that's, you know, as an example of a retailer?
I think the answer to that is twofold. I think if from the YouGov research that Colliers commissioned, the overall result, the overall headline, was actually across all age groups, their local town centre was the most appealing place to shop. And that was over half the 3,000 that we interviewed. When we looked at the 18 to 24 age group, that percentage grew to 78%. So 78% of that age group preferred to shop in town centres. Now, in answer to your Primark effect question, I think that's part of it. I think the other part is the social experiential side of it. Yeah, the younger generations in particular like to go to town centres because of the leisure and the food and beverage offer. It's a social experience, and those combined make it the most appealing place.
It's a double-edged sword because the older people are less inclined. Is that because they're shopping online? Because clearly the retailers need those guys, because that's where the increased spend is going to come from. So are they shopping online, do you think?
Well, I'll go back to the earlier point. The main headline from the research was even across all age groups, that the older generations, the over 45s, still prefer to shop in town centres, and that's against the shopping centres and the retail parks.
Are you finding increasingly that more and more commercial property is changing to housing use?
It's starting in some places. I mean, there's no doubt about it, because of online retail now is approximately 20% of all retail spend. So 80% is still in physical stores, but that 20% that's gone online means there needs to be a proportional reduction in physical buildings used for retail purposes.
Yeah.
So yes, I mean, more are being redeveloped for alternative uses. That could be residential in some areas, not all. But yes, you know, we are starting to see that some parts of, or in some cases, whole shopping centres are going to be converted for other uses. That could be usually it's combinations of leisure, residential, maybe a bit of office accommodation, usually a variety of uses.
Okay. Now we're seeing a lot of empty shop premises. Is that falling, increasing, and what's happening with rent?
Well, the number of vacant shops is going up, and as part of this evolution, and the number of shop leases available, where the shops aren't vacant but you can buy the lease off the current occupier, is also going up. And as a result of that, increased supply means generally the price goes down. So rents are softening quite quickly. So it's for retailers, it's a buyer's market, and those that are the more dynamic and still expanding, they're getting better and better deals. The landlords, who I would emphasise also include pension funds that you or your family might invest in, the mainstream pension funds, they're having to take the financial hit of that. So the good news is that I think we're going to come out to a better place for the customer. But in the meantime, there are some financial penalties to pay for some parties.
Sure. So a better place for customers. How long do you think until business itself gets that confidence back on the high street?
That's a tricky one, really, because there's lots of sort of macroeconomic factors in the equation at the moment, be it Brexit, you know, that's probably a biggie. But also, you know, the effect of the commercial rates situation really is quite a severe one. Our view is that the commercial rates system is not really fit for purpose at the moment, and one of our colleagues, John Webber, has been quite vocal about that. So at a time when the retail sector is evolving very quickly, there are some quite severe macroeconomic headwinds that have also been thrown into the equation. So the rate at which all of those factors resolve themselves will decide, you know, how things are going to go from here.
Where do you think the pressure is going to come from to get business rates to a more reasonable, practical level for business?
Well, it's
industry-wide.
Yeah, it comes from the occupiers and business interests to the government, really. The government have got the levers to change things. They're in control of it. And it just needs increasing pressure from private and public, or any public bodies that are affected by it, to bring that to bear on those that control it.
So the long-term view will be good. We'll come out of this change and this dip, you think?
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, what we're seeing at the moment is a period of evolution, as I mentioned, which is resulting in much, much greater choice for the customer, which has got to be good. It's just for those people servicing that industry, it's a fairly steep and complex learning curve, but many people are doing incredibly well as a result. Those that stand still are going backwards, and companies like BHS have already gone bust, like Woolworths before them. If they lose their relevance and they don't keep up with the market evolution, they fall foul of it.
And I think to build on to Mark's point there, the most important thing, you know, amidst all of this retail industrial revolution, as we're calling it, staying close to shopper opinion is the most important thing. And I think that was the major theme that came out of the survey, asking the people what they think and building that feedback and that opinion into a strategy to have a successful town centre. Then you will get people to come out and choose to shop on the high street rather than spend the afternoon on their iPad.
Yeah, yeah, fair point. Okay, so if people want to read the Midsummer Retail Report, it'll be available on your website?
Yes, colliers.com/retail.
Mark and Matt, thank you very much for your time today. Fascinating conversation, and all the best for the future.
And you, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, thanks to those guys who, I'll admit, they did sound like they're in a bathroom. I don't think they probably were. conference calls, guys, do sound like that on the radio. But thank you to Colliers International, thank you to Aaron, and thank you to Simon Reeve and the guys at the High Street Awards. And thank you, Nicola.
Thanks for having me again, Ian.
And we'll be back soon with another All In My Business. Take